Matthew chapter 5, I'll begin in verse 38. You have heard that it's been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. If any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Together in verse 42. Ready? Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. As you see in all these verses, the idea is going beyond the minimum, or going beyond what you just have to do. We're going to focus this evening on verse number 41, and whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. We're going to look at a very familiar text, and really a familiar truth, but I think one that we're not careful, we get away from. And this is what we call the joyful mile, or someone would call it the second mile. But this idea of the joyful mile, I do appreciate your faithfulness, all that you do, doing whatever the Lord would ask you to do. But I think at the same time, we ought to do it with a joy and a happiness, I guess. If the idea is, I love Jesus, I'll go to church, I read my Bible. And it's almost like we do it in a disdained way or a mad way, like, I'm saved, but man, it really makes me mad I'm saved. Okay, that's not how it should be. I think there should be a joyfulness in our Christianity. Not necessarily a giddiness, not necessarily a heel clicking, jumping in the air, yippee, but there should be a joyfulness that identifies us as God's people. And I know our personalities are different, and sometimes when you're sick, you're not maybe as joyful as at other times, but generally speaking, there should be a joyfulness. And I think that's what the Lord is conveying to us here in Matthew 5. That we're not just going through it, and we're not just trying to trudge along and just trying to make it, just trying to exist another day until I finally drop dead in the grave. But the idea that we're doing this with a sense of joy and a sense, again, happiness, I guess we could say, about our Christianity, about living for the Lord. So we're talking about tonight about the joyful mile. Let's pray. Get right into the message. Father, do pray that you would help us. I do believe, Lord, that there is a source of joy as we serve you. And I do think we ought to serve you. We ought to be faithful to you. We ought to do what we're supposed to do. But I do think we can do it in a joyful way. It doesn't always have to be drudgery. It doesn't always have to be something that almost we disdain or we just have a distaste for. I believe we can do it in a way, Lord, that honors you, but also brings joy to our own life. And so I pray that you'd help us tonight as we look at this joyful mile. We ask for these things in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. Let me explain what's happening here. Because really understanding what Jesus is saying to them kind of tells us, gives us an insight of what he's trying to teach them. Now, it may not mean as much to us when we go to Matthew chapter 5. A lot of times we try to, and I understand, I'm not criticizing. We do this as just natural. We read the Bible and we look at our life or our contemporary times and we say, okay, well, what does that mean? But sometimes we got to stop and say, well, what did it mean when Jesus said it? Because that helps us understand a lot about what Jesus is trying to teach. And so it does apply to today and it does mean something for today, but it begins with what did it mean when he originally said it? Because that's important. And so he's talking to the Jewish people here and he tells them in verse 41, whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. That may seem odd because you're like, well, let's say I'm going to a store and someone wants me to go to the next store. Is that what he's talking about? Well, not exactly like that. There's actually a more deeper meaning or more specific meaning that he's talking about. In the Jewish times, back in these times that Jesus is talking about, the Jewish people, the Israel was not a free nation, an independent nation. They looked at themselves still as a nation, but they were ruled and controlled and oversaw by the Roman Empire. Now, the Romans were good. They would give you certain freedoms, certain things you could do within it. That's why they had the Sanhedrin, and that's why the Jewish leaders took Jesus to the Roman governor, because the Jewish leaders were like the on-the-scene type of leadership, and they took it ahead to get permission from the Roman governor to crucify him. But the Romans ultimately were the people in charge. And the Roman law trumped the Jewish law, and that really made the Jewish people mad. They didn't like the idea that Romans told them what to do or required them to do certain things. They wanted to be a free and independent nation, and they could have been, except for Rome had conquered them, and it wasn't going to happen.
And so now they're under the Roman thumb, as it were, and they were being forced to do what Rome told them to do. And one of the requirements, one of the laws that Rome had was this, that if a Roman soldier would come to you, now this would apply to the Jews, apply to anyone, but in this case it applies to the Jews. If the Roman soldier came to you and gave you his pack, you were required by law to carry that pack 1 mile. Now, obviously, in those days, walking was a big way of getting from place point A to point B, and so the Roman soldiers are always looking for someone to help carry their heavy pack. And so the Roman soldier would hand the Jewish person there, he'd hand him his pack, and that by order of the law, this Jewish person would have to carry this heavy pack 1 mile. Now, the problem really wasn't the weight. That was probably a part of it, but it wasn't really that. It was this, they had to do it. That was the thing that just drove them up the wall. They had to do it. They couldn't say no. They couldn't say, hey, find someone else. They had to do it. And it was a burr under their saddle. They were being forced by a invading army, a conquering army, to help that conquering army carry their pack for that mile. And they detested it. They hated it, but because of law, they had to do it. And I'm sure if they didn't do it, there would be consequences to it. And so a soldier would come to him, a Roman soldier would come to him and hand him the pack, and probably not nicely. They probably didn't say, oh, Mr. Israelite guy, would you please carry this? They just probably said, here, take this. And so then he had to carry it, and he's carrying this pack. And now you know when the 1 mile marker is up, what do you think he did? That's it. I've done my duty. We're out of here. And the Roman soldier would pick it up and look for another stooge or something or another person. Hey, carry this now for a mile. And so that is what Jesus is talking about. And so when Jesus says this in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 41, when he says, and whosoever shall compel thee, because that they by right they could do that, shall compel thee to go a mile, and then they knew exactly what Jesus was saying. Then he says this to them, go two. And you can imagine, they probably looked at Jesus and said, you're nuts. You're crazy. I hate the 1 mile. Why would I ever go the second? But yet Jesus is teaching an important truth about our Christian life here, about this second mile, what we call the joyful mile. So the question I guess we would ask ourselves as we get into the message tonight is this, how can duty become a joy? That's really what Jesus is saying. You have a duty to go 1 mile, but I'm telling you how to take that duty that you think you hate, the thing you detest, the thing you don't like, the thing you suffer through, the thing you do because you've got to do it, but you wouldn't do it if you didn't have to do it, but you do it anyways. How can that duty become a joy? And he's teaching them, I think, an important lesson here about this joyful mile. So three things I want to share with you tonight about this idea about duty becoming a joy. Here's the first thing I'd share with you tonight. Number one is this. Joy, now listen carefully, because the first two is what joy, how it doesn't happen. The third point is how it does happen. But I got to cover how it doesn't happen because these are the mistakes we make. Number one is this. Joy does not come from a change of direction. In our minds, that's where the joy is going to come from. But that's not how joy comes. You see, the second mile, which was the joyful mile, could only be accomplished. You could only go the joyful mile. You could only go the second mile if you first went the first mile. So if you don't go the first mile, you can never go the second mile. And so joy does not come from a change of direction. In other words, we put it this way, joy is found in the keep on keeping on. Joy is found in the continuation of what we're supposed to be doing. I told you this story before, and it, for some reason this thing just, it always sticks in my head, and I kind of picture it, and it was just an odd thing. Maybe because of when it happened, maybe that's why it sticks in my head. And I left in 1982 the beautiful hills of West Virginia. Tears going down my eyes. And I got in and drove up to Pittsburgh, I guess it was, and got on the plane to fly to Chicago to go to Bible college. Now, I don't remember really if it was at the Pittsburgh airport, but I think it was, or it could have been at the Chicago airport, but I'm pretty sure it was the Pittsburgh airport. Or it might have been at the place we laid over, because Pittsburgh's here, and Chicago's here, and so they sent us down here to go up to here. Yeah, how it is. So I think they flew us down to Greensboro, North Carolina, and then up to Chicago. But anyways, at this airport, during this time, I'm going through the airport. Now, I've never flown before. I've never been at an airport before. And I'm leaving West Virginia. So you can imagine the heartbreak. You can imagine the tears going down the eyes. I'm leaving West Virginia. Plus, it's like, go home, Lee. Look at this. Look at those big planes. I mean, I'm just kind of this hillbilly walking in this big airport. And so I come across this bookstore, and there's this poster. And I've told you the story before, but it still sticks in my head. And in this poster, it was a fence going this way and a fence going this way. So you had a field in four sections. Fence going vertically, fence going horizontally, separating into four fields. And every field had a cow. And every cow had its head stuck to the fence, eating the grass out of the other field. So this cow was eating out of that. This cow was eating out of that field. This cow was eating out of that field. This cow was eating out of this field. And this cow was eating out of this field. And the little caption said, the grass is always greener on the other side. And so I remember that to this day. And it just really just struck me. I'm going to tell you, as I've lived my life now for 30-some years since then, that is still a true way that how people look. They always think, if I walked a different mile, if I did something different in my life, if there was something else I could do, that would bring the joy. But what Jesus is saying is joy doesn't come from the change of direction. Joy actually comes from the continuation of what we're supposed to be doing. In our mind, somehow, we have this thought that quitting will bring the joy. But I tell you really what happens? Quitting just simply brings a whole new slew of problems. We see that in divorces, don't you? People have the idea, well, I'm going to end this marriage and marry someone else. And you know what when you find out when you marry someone else? There's still problems. There's no perfect marriage. You say, well, I left this problem and I started with this problem. And then I leave this problem and I still got another problem. And so you're never going to end problems that way. You never quit in order to bring the joy. That's not where the joy comes from. There are times when you'll find preachers do this. And we tell ourselves this, I guess. We get involved in the ministry and we get involved in all the issues that go on in the ministry and a lot of things that are behind the scene that just kind of drives you up the wall. Like, you know, maybe you preach on something and everyone does the opposite. And anyways, I won't go down that road. But anyways, so things like that can kind of irritate you and such. And then you start telling yourself, you know, if I worked a different job, I'm not happy in doing this. If I just quit the ministry and worked a secular job, that's where I find joy. But you know what you find in that secular job? Headaches and problems. Because there's still people there. And so that doesn't work. Sometimes even as believers, we have this idea, you know, if I could just, you know, if I quit church, if I quit soul winning, if I just quit my quiet time, if I quit tithing, if I just gave everything up, this whole Christian life, just gave it up, all of that stress, all of that headache, all of that pressure, and I could just live free and clear of that, I'd have no problem. Can I tell you, you'd have another slew of problems. And so the idea of quitting isn't going to bring the joy. The joy does not come from a change of direction. The second mile, which is the joyful mile, is only a continuation of the first mile. Let me see if I can build on to a little bit more specifically. There are times when we have this idea that we can quit in search of greener pastures, and somehow we will find this nirvana of joy. But all we find is more duty or more problems or more of the pressures that we're trying to run from. And we never find the joy that we could have. And the reason is this. Now watch this. We spend a lifetime. I want you to see if you can picture this in your head. We spend a lifetime going a mile in this direction. And we get discouraged and we quit. So we go a mile in this direction, and we get discouraged, and we quit. And we go a mile in this direction, and we get discouraged, and quit. And we go a mile in this direction, and we get discouraged, and quit. And we say, no matter what I do, there's no joy in any of it. And the problem is, you never went the second mile. You see, the joy is not in that first mile. The joy is in the continuation, going beyond that first mile. I know you say, well, exactly what you mean. Well, I'm going to tell you exactly what I mean. Not every mile is a joyful mile. The joyful mile is the mile that we go beyond the duty, beyond what I just have to do, beyond just what what I'm forced to do. But when I go beyond that, that's when I'm going to find the joy. If all I do is spend my life just doing the minimum, just doing what I got to do, I will never find joy. Joy is being faithful in my duty, but then in continue on beyond that, and that is where the joy is going to be found. If I think about in the ministry, if I apply it to myself and think about the ministry, you know where the joy is in pastoring? And I say this, and I don't mean, it might be taken wrong, I hope it isn't, but the joy is really not in the first 5, 6, 7 years. The joy comes after that. Because now, because they say the average preacher stays somewhere 5, 6, 7 years, and then either he leaves or they throw him out or whatever happens, he's out the door. And then he goes to another church. He's there 5, 6, 7 years. And then he goes to another church 5, 6, 7 years. And he goes to another church. But he never finds the joy. And the reason is, he leaves too soon. It takes a while for people to get used to each other. It takes a while for people to say, oh, I see. That's a joke. He wants me to laugh. Okay, now I get it. He's been doing that for years. I never really knew he was telling a joke. Oh, bad me. It takes a while for personalities to click. It takes a while for people to work together. And after that first mile, as it were, as that first section of time occurs, that's then when the joy is. I tell you, pastoring after 12 years, again, hopefully it doesn't sound mean because I don't want me to get mad. Well, wait a minute, I thought you liked it 5 years ago. I did. I always liked it. Okay, but I'm telling you this, pastoring at 12 years is a lot more joy than pastoring in the first year. Because everyone's kind of looking at you and, well, I don't know. What did he say? That's what he said. Well, do you think he's a heretic? No, I don't know. I don't know. We'll come a couple more times and check him out. And so after 5 or 6 years, they figure, well, you know, he hasn't been a heretic yet. He'll probably be okay. And so eventually, then it becomes that joyful mile. So what I'm trying to get across to you tonight is this, that joy does not come from a change of direction. If our goal is this, if our hope is this, I'm just going to quit and do something else, you're not going to go find joy that way. You're not going to find it in your marriage that way. You're not going to find it in your family that way. You're not going to... There's people, this in itself is kind of interesting. There's people who every time I talk to them, they have a different job. And I say, well, didn't you just have a job like 6, 7 weeks ago? Yeah, but I didn't like it. That was 6 or 7 weeks ago. Yeah, but it just didn't pan out. It was 6 or 7 weeks. You got to work several years before you know it's going to pan out. But there's people that work a short time. No, I didn't like that. Short time here, short time. And they never go through that first mile, never go through the duty, never go through the burden, and they never find really where the joy is. The joy is in the second mile. The joy is going beyond the duty and what the bare minimum. That's where you're going to find the joy at. We're not done yet. Let me add to that now. So I said, number one, joy does not come from a change of direction. And number two is this. Now we're going to add one more side to that before we get to really the how the joy comes. Number two is this, joy does not come from a change of burden. And by that, let me back up. Jesus said, you go the second mile. So if all you do is put this load on, you go 1 mile with this soldier and you throw the load down, that's it. You'll never go the second mile, you'll never find the joy. And that's how some people live. They just go 1 mile, and it's always grumbling, always complaining, never find joy because as soon as that 1 mile's up, yep, there goes it. I ain't doing anything more than what I gotta do, and they never find the joy. The second reason we don't find the joy is this, is it does not come from a change of burden. By that, I mean a lack of burden. We think this, I would really enjoy that second mile if I wasn't carrying the pack the first mile. What Jesus says is, it's carrying the pack the first mile and then doing it again the second mile is where the joy comes from. It's not because we say this, you know what, here's why I have no joy. I got problems. That's not why you don't have any joy. I tell you why I have no joy. I got burdens in my life. That's not why you don't have any joy. Regardless of our circumstances, regardless of our burdens, regardless of our heartaches, regardless of what we're going through in life, there is a source of joy beyond all of those things. So joy does not come from simply a change of burden, and by that I mean getting rid of burdens and having no burdens. Too many times we think that joy is achieved by a life of ease and comfort. It's not as popular now, but when, seven, 8 years ago, it was real popular when people were starting to work from home or work away from work, you know, telework or whatever. Well, that's, okay, they say they work at home, but, you know, You're not there and you're really not sure what they're doing. And so I know people tell me they work from home all the time, but I have my doubts about it. Anyways, I'm just teasing Doug. So anyways, you could cut the cord and they showed this guy sitting in his beach chair out of the beach and working on his computer. And boy, he just loved his job because it was no burden at all. You know, I wish life was that way. That you could go to some situation in life, you could do everything you're supposed to do, it would never be a problem. Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if you could have a company that would change tires and would never be hard to do? That every tire, you just took the tire and you put it in this thing, you pushed a button, you took it out, and it was already done. You just kept going through that. Wouldn't that be great? But that's not how life is. Life by its makeup has burdens. Because you're dealing with people and you're dealing with problems and you're dealing with sin. We live in a sin-cursed world. So joy cannot come simply from getting rid of the burden. Jesus said, I'm not telling you when he hands you the pack, throw the pack down and walk 2 miles away from him. That's not what he said. He didn't say, okay, the guy says, here, carry this. No, and then run 2 miles, he can't catch it. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, take that pack, go a mile. When you get to that mile marker and the soldier stops because he's expecting to drop it, keep that burden, that the thing you don't like, the thing you don't want to have, and go another mile with it. So joy does not come from a change of burden. It doesn't come from a life of ease and comfort. That's not where the joy comes from. Often it is the going through life with the burden and continuing beyond the minimum that brings that joy. When we think about serving the Lord, and that's how we're going to apply it here, as we think about serving the Lord and the joy that comes from serving the Lord is not because there's no burdens. Sometimes we think that. We see someone and they're upbeat and they're bubbly, effervescent type of personality, kind of like a plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what is that? Alka-Seltzer. They're kind of like Alka-Seltzer personality. They're just bubbling. Or they make you sick to your stomach. One of the two. So they're bubbling. And so they have this bubbling, effervescent personality. And you say, boy, I wish I had their life. Not a care in the world. Look at them. They're so happy. They don't have any cares. But if you delve down into their life, sometimes you find they are the ones who carry the greatest load and the greatest burden. Because the idea of joy is not the escape of burden, not the lack of burden, but it's going through these burdens and going beyond what you just have to do, continuing on with those burdens, not quitting, not giving up, not throwing off the burden, not just running away from that burden, but bearing that burden, not just a minimum, but going beyond that, going the second mile, and that's when you find the joy. There's a great understanding, a great truth. We think about our Christian life and the idea of duty and faithfulness and work and labor. Those aren't always the words we like, but those are often the words that bring joy. So we think again about serving the Lord. Let me just give you the skinny. I'm going to give you the skinny on serving the Lord. You ready? Every ministry, I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's nursery or junior church or children's church or sunshine or Sunday school or bus ministry or whatever it is. I'm not sure about PA because it looks pretty easy because they sleep most of the time. So I'm assuming it's either easy or very comfortable. But anyways, going on. So as we think about all these ministries about serving the Lord. Now here's the skinny. Ready? Every ministry. Now listen, every ministry is a burden. It's hard to do. Some people say, well, you know, Pastor Wright, I would do that as long as it's not hard. Then you really don't want to do it. Because really, most of the time, serving the Lord is a hard thing. You got to deal with people. People can be knotheads. You got to deal with lack of resources at times. You got to deal with just the complications of life. And so ministry can be a burden. And there's people who run from the ministry because they say, I don't want to do that. That's hard. That's burdensome. That's wearisome. That's going to cost me some time and some sweat and some effort. I don't want that. What I want is joy. I don't want the burden, can I tell you? It is in the burden that you find the joy. Let me tell you what I enjoy about the ministry. I enjoy preaching. That I would say that I do enjoy preaching because it's just something the Lord does, and it goes really, it's outside of my comfort zone, but the Lord seems to carry me through. I'm not sure if you enjoy the preaching, but I enjoy at least this side of it. On that side of it, you have to answer for yourself. Okay, but I enjoy preaching, but that's not really the joy of the ministry. So I'm not saying I don't enjoy preaching because I don't want to come across wrong, but that's not the joy of the ministry. You know what the joy of the ministry is? It's putting the time and effort in and seeing the Lord use you to do something in someone else's life. Whether I'm driving a Sunshine bus, or whether we're doing something at VBS, or whatever the investment, or even over the years when I've done junior church, or when I had bus routes, or whatever different Sunday school classes, whatever that ministry is, every ministry that I've been asked to be a part of, it's always been, here's how I've always approached it. First, I'm thinking, that's going to be a lot of work. Okay, I'll do the best I can at it. I may not do as good as someone. I'll do the best I can. I'll give it my best. And then you begin working that ministry. And if there's time, it's like, oh man, I gotta do that, and that's gonna take some time, and boy, sometimes it's stressful, and sometimes it's a headache. But at the end of the day, when you've made an impact on someone's life, that's where the joy comes from. You know, was it Easter? I think it was Easter Sunday. When Melissa Romero was here, and some of her family. Some of you know her, some of you don't. But she was a bus kid back when I was at Victory. I met her, and she was in eighth grade. She was already a bus kid when I showed up at the church. But we had started the Christian school, and she enrolled eighth grade in the Christian school. And the Lord just somehow supernaturally knitted our hearts together. She was really a good girl, and really just wanted to kind of do, you know, help out in any way she could. You know, the was working Christian school hard? Yep. Was it, did it pay well? Nope. Was it frustrating? Yep. But the joy wasn't the paycheck. And the joy wasn't the, when they, at the end of the year, okay, let's give Brother White a big hand, yay! Okay, that's not the joy. You know what the joy is? To know you made an impact in Melissa Romero's life. That's what the joy is. And yes, there's a burden, but it's in the burden that we find the joy. So joy does not come from a change of direction. Joy does not come from a change of burden. So you ask me then, well, Pastor White, you haven't answered the question. The question was, we started with, how can duty become a joy? Well, you told me how it doesn't, so how does it? So number three, here's the answer. Here's how duty becomes a joy. Number three is this. Joy does come from a change of focus. Not a change of job. Not a change of a burden. Not a change of the direction. Not giving up. Not going just the bare minimum, that's it. Joy does come, though, from a change of focus. Now, what do you mean by that? Well, first, it's a change of focus on our destination. If all I do, carrying this burden, I don't like it, I'm just looking, let's say this is the 1 mile marker right here. If that's my whole focus, I'm just grumbling and complaining. When I get that 1 mile marker, finally I'm there. There's no joy. But when I look at that 2 mile marker, which is way beyond that, and I say, you know what, I'm going to do beyond what I have to do. I'm going to do more than what's required. I'm going to give it my best, which is beyond the minimum. I'm going to do more than that. When I change my focus, that's when the joy comes in. So joy comes from this change of focus, and it's a change of focus on our destination. The first mile is the duty mile. You do it because you have to. You do it because you're forced to do it. You're required to do it. The second mile is the joyful mile. You do it because you want to do it. You're giving of yourself. You're sacrificing willingly to do it. And that is where the joy comes from. Let me put it this way. What is our goal? What is the destination we're seeking? Is it simply, now watch this, is it simply completion of a job or excellence of a job? You know, if all we're going to do, we'll go back to serving God, because we're at church and we're talking about serving God, which is a good thing to talk about at church. So the idea of we're serving God, if all I'm trying to do is just get enough, I'm just going to do just enough so I can get this, okay, this is what they asked me to do, and I'm going to do everything they asked me, but nothing more, you're not going to find joy in it. Joy is when, how can I really excel at what I'm doing? I have found that true in my life. if I go even beyond serving God, when I make it about how can I be the best at this, not just how can I just do what has to be done, I'll use a FedEx illustration. So I'm working at FedEx. I'm working second shift. Go to school all during the day, work during the night, and drive home, get a little bit of sleep, go right back to school again. So after a while, it gets really boring. It's the same job, same stops, same packages. Not literally, but they look the same because they're in the FedEx packages. You're in the same trucks, and you're putting them. You spend part of the day putting them on the truck, part of the day putting them off the truck. On, off. Walks on, walks off. So it's on and off and on and off. And they go down the conveyor belt, and then they actually go top of the conveyor belt and load the other containers up. I said, you know, I need to motivate myself. So here's what I said. How could, if I really wanted to be the best at this, what could I do? Now, I'm doing this for myself just because I'm just really not really excited. I just want to go home. So I can't go home. I got to do this. So what can I do? So I decided, I had a job. My job was, I had this is, we're dating ourselves again. This is like 1988. So I had this little computer about this size, which had maybe a micro amount of computing like our phones. It was just a real box thing. It had a big wand, and I had to scan these barcodes. And I had this long conveyor belt here, and I had to scan all of the barcodes. Beep, 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 beep. Beep, 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 beep. And so I'm just scanning. That's all, and the packages are moving and so forth. And you're scanning. You're trying to keep up. It's really, I mean, they paid us a lot of money, but it was boring. And another guy here took certain packages off. It was called bleed off. We bled certain packages off, and we loaded this truck here. So he would say, it was certain codes you look for. Okay, that one. And he'd pick this one. You put it on this rollers. And then you had a third guy who was at the end of the rollers picking the boxes up and loading the truck. So I said, I wonder if I could scan and bleed off. So that night, I said, hey, I was there long enough. Sometimes people just think you know what you're doing. So I said, hey, I'll tell you what, tonight I'm going to do the bleed off, okay? And the guy said, okay, so I'm going to feed you. Then I went down here and told this guy, hey, tonight I'm going to do the scanning, so give me the scanner. Okay, whatever. So I'm scanning, beep, 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 beep. And then I put my scanner down, and I'd run down here, and I'd pick the package up, and I'm feeding on the roller like this, and then I'm running back here and grabbing my thing, beep, 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 and I'm running back here like this, and I'm pulling this thing out here. I'm rolling. Then I said, you know what, I think I can do a little bit better than that. So I tell this guy the next night, hey, I'm going to go ahead and load the truck. Okay, fine. He goes to something else. I go to this guy. Hey, I'm going to pull the package off. I tell this guy, hey, I'm going to scan. Now, so on that night, I scan. I run down here. I'm yanking packages. If something you shipped in 1989 at FedEx, it was broke, it was not my fault. Okay? So I'm grabbing, boom, boom, I'm throwing things off, you know, just, and I'm running back here, scanning, grabbing, throwing, and then, running on the truck, stack, 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 running back. Oh boy, what a night. But I tell you, that was the funnest night I had at FedEx. That was the funnest night because by the time it got done, it felt like, well, number one, I felt like I was having a heart attack, but it's kind of like right now. And then, but also, it was beyond just what I had to do. So what I'm trying to say is this. Joy comes not doing the minimum. Joy doesn't come from doing just what I have to do. Joy comes saying, how can I do this job the very best? How can I excel at what the Lord wants me to do? How can I invest myself beyond? How can I, for example, I have a classroom. How can I decorate it and make it look really nice? How could I really prepare a lesson? How could I really invest in the ministry? That's what brings the joy. So it's a change of focus on the destination. I'm still thinking about FedEx and breathing hard. So the second thing is this. So it comes from a change of focus. Change of focus on our destination. That's A. Here's B. A change of focus. Now watch this, and this makes it a little more personal. A change of focus on our master. The Jews hated carrying that pack. Because of the Romans. Because the Romans, they looked at, was being their masters. The Romans said, you will carry, and you will carry it for a mile, because we say so. We're in charge. You listen to us. You do what we say. And the Jews balked at that. They hated that. They resisted that. And there was no joy. There was just duty, and they didn't like that. That was what their master was telling them to do, and they hated that fact. But here's what Jesus says. He says in Matthew 5, verse 39, "But I say unto you." It's not what the Romans are telling you. It's not what the Romans are requiring of you. I'm saying it to you. Do it because I'm saying it. Don't do it because of the Romans. Don't do it because they're lording over you. Do it because I'm asking you to do it. And when they realize, you know what, I'm going to carry this pack. Not because you're a Roman soldier and you're threatening me. I'm carrying this pack because of Jesus. And I'm going to show you I'm doing it because of Jesus. Because if I did it because of you and 1 mile marker, I would drop it. But I'm going another mile. Because my master, not you, my real master, the Lord Jesus Christ, compels me to go beyond even what you want. So there's a change of focus on our master. Focusing on Jesus turns the duty into joy. That's true in many ways. Whatever you're frustrated with, whatever you're burdened by, whatever that thing is that you detest, maybe it's a person that you're dealing with, and I just fume when I think about them. They make my blood boil. Sometimes it's in a relationship type of situation. Maybe for me it was my stepfather, and I just could not stand him. And what changed? Art never changed. What changed was this: when the Lord said, when I understood from Colossians, the Lord said this: don't do it for Art. That's my stepfather. Do it for me. Be nice to him for my sake. Show kindness for my sake. I remember there was a Father's Day. Now, I'm not saying this was right. I'm just saying this is how I felt. You know, for when one of my friends would say, "Hey, your father," I mean, me and my friend almost go in fist fights. I'd be in their face. I said, "He is not my father. He is not my..." Don't ever say that to me. Now, I could not. That was just, instant anger. But then the Lord began dealing with me. And I said, "Lord, I'm not looking at Art Nethkin. I'm looking at you. And I'll do it because of you." Father's Day came up. And I decided, as a way of honoring the Lord, I would buy my stepfather a Father's Day gift. So I asked my mom for some ideas. She gave me some ideas and went out to the store. At that time I had a job and that allowed me to do this. And so I went out to the store and bought it wasn't a gun case, but it was one of these, there's a name for it. But anyways, it was like a bag. You put your gun in, zip it up, something. There's a name for that. But anyways, I got that for one of his guns because he was trying to put it away and take care of it. So I bought that for him for Father's Day. Now, I didn't think much about it other than I'll do this for the Lord's sake. Interesting enough, years later, my mom said, "You know, to this day," this is like years later, he said, "to this day, Art still has that. And he still talks about the time you bought it for him." Now, I didn't do it for that reason. I did it because I was trying to focus on a different master. So sometimes we just got to say, you know what, I'm not doing it because the preacher says so. I'm not doing it because my mom and dad or my husband or my wife or my boss or this person or that person. I'm doing this because this is what the Lord wants. And when I change that focus, instead of just, I'm just going to do it because I got to do it, and when I don't have to do it, I ain't doing it a bit more. 1 mile, that's it. Instead of that attitude, say, you know what? I'm doing this for Jesus. So much so, I'll go 2 miles. I'll go 3. I'll go 4. I'll go 5. I don't have to stop because I'm not doing it for this Roman soldier. I'm doing this for Jesus. And that change of focus is what brings the joy in the midst of that duty. So I told you tonight, joy does not come from a change of direction. You got to go the second mile. You can't just quit every 1 mile because you'll never find the joyful mile. Joy does not come from a change of burden. You can't simply throw off that burden and never carry it and never pick up the pack, because it's carrying that pack beyond what's required. Taking that burden beyond that. Not just completing something, but excelling at it. That is what brings the joy. We talked about the change of focus. Though the joy comes from a change of focus on our destination and then a change of focus on our master. So Jesus comes to them, to these Jewish people. And he said, now, if someone compels you to go 1 mile, he wasn't talking to anyone. He, just anyone. He was talking about this situation of these Roman soldiers. And they, when, as soon as he said it, they knew exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that. It just, oh, burns me when they ask me to do that. He said, I know. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go 2 miles.
What?
Yeah. Because that second mile is where you'll find the joy. You hate the first mile. Oh, we hate it. Go 2. You'll find the joy. What? Yeah, go 2. Because if all you do is stay in that first mile, all it'll be is duty all the time. The joyful mile is in that second mile.